Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am going to cover in this audio chapter 141 of the book of Psalms. Psalms 141, I will entitle it the psalm, Give Ear to My Voice. The header to the psalm says simply a psalm of David, so we will assume that David wrote the psalm. We begin now in verses 1 and 2 of Psalms 141. David begins, O Lord, I call upon you. Hasten to me. Give ear to my voice when I call to you. May my prayer be counted as incense before you, the lifting up of my hands as the evening offering. Now David is calling upon the Lord in verse 1, and Adam Clark notices a pattern in David's psalms, a pattern which is quite obvious. We have gone through David's psalms in great detail as we go through these podcasts, and I think you will agree with Clark when I read you his quotation, quote, Many of David's psalms begin with complaints, but they are not those of habitual plaint and peevishness. He was in frequent troubles and difficulties, and he always sought help in God. He ever appears in earnest. At no time is there any evidence that the devotion of David was formal. He prayed, meditated, supplicated, groaned, cried, and even roared, as he tells us, for the disquietude of his soul. He had speedy answers, that means God answered him quickly, for he had much faith and was always in earnest. That was Adam Clark's quotation. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that the style of this poem here in Psalms 141 is evidence that David wrote the psalm. And I'm usually not big on style arguments, style proving who wrote the book, but having become quite familiar with David's style, I would say, yes, this psalm fits the style. First of all, please God, help me then, God, you're going to help me. In verse 2, David says, May my prayer be counted as incense before you. Now, incense is a very common symbol in the scriptures for prayers. Ever since Aaron first burned incense on the altar of incense, as the NIV Study Bible points out, the altar of incense was set up to symbolize prayer continually ascending to heaven, the golden altar that stood in front of the doorway to the Holy of Holies. How is incense like prayer? Well, it rises to heaven like prayers do. Incense is fragrant like a prayer is, and it's pleasing like prayers are. Our prayers are pleasing to God. David says in verse 2, May my prayer be counted as incense before you. In the second part of the verse, he says, The lifting up of my hands, may they be counted as the evening offering. Why the evening offering? Why not the mention of the morning offering? There was a morning and evening offering, as you know, very famous. Here's some options from John Gill as to why the evening offering is only mentioned and not the morning offering. Option number one, the evening offering represents both the morning and evening sacrifice, and I think that's the answer. Or it could be the psalm was composed at night, and so David mentions the evening offering because he was writing at night. Well, I guess that's possible. Here's a weird option. Option number three, the evening offering is only mentioned because the evening offering was the last offering of the day, and therefore it was more acceptable. I don't know why that is. Option number four, the evening offering was the hour of prayer. In Acts 3:1, we read, Now Peter and John were going up to the temple at the ninth hour, and the hour of prayer, as the Holman Christian Study Bible points out, in its translation of Acts 3:1, the hour of prayer is 3 in the afternoon, the ninth hour, the Jewish day starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, of course, that doesn't mean it's the only hour of prayer, but it was an hour of prayer. And so that's probably why David mentioned this, because he's talking about lifting up his hands, which is prayer. I think that's quite reasonable also. At any rate, David lifted up his hands, which was a common posture of prayer. He says the lifting up of my hands. He's praying by holding his hands up to God. Now, as I said, that's a common posture of prayer amongst ancient pagans as well as Jews. Even Aristotle said that, quoted by Plutarch, by Virgil, by Ovid. Those three pagan writers quote Aristotle as saying that the pagan gods were prayed to with uplifted hands. Even today in modern times, people pray with uplifted hands. Well, what's the symbolism of an uplifted hand? Well, the open hands show that the supplicant wants to receive things from God. The uplifted hands also show that the supplicant wants God to grab on and deliver him. Help me, O God, here's my hand. So that's easy symbolism. We go now to verses 3 and 4 of Psalms 141. David continues, Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing. to practice deeds of wickedness with men who do iniquity, and do not let me eat of their delicacies. Now, what does David mean when he asks God to keep watch over the door of his lips? Well, option number one, NIV Study Bible. David didn't want to say anything evil. So, God, watch my lips. Keep me from saying anything evil, which might reflect impure things in my heart, especially in the presence of the wicked, because the wicked would then use these evil things against David. Adam Clark's interpretation of this phrase, keep watch over the door of my lips, is that David wanted to guard himself in case his enemies had spies around. That's plausible, but I think the NIV Study Bible's right. David is saying, don't let me say anything impure or sinful. Because in verse 4 he says, do not incline my heart to any evil thing. So that's sort of the context, is don't let me feel anything evil. Don't let me think about anything evil. Don't let me do anything evil at the end of verse 4 to practice deeds of wickedness. So in verse 3, the end of the verse, David is saying, don't let me say anything evil. Verse 4, first part of the verse, don't let me think anything evil. Do not let my heart incline to any evil thing. And at the end of verse 4, to practice deeds of wickedness, don't let me do anything evil. And it's not just doing evil or thinking evil or speaking evil in the abstract, but it is being involved in evil with men who do iniquity. In other words, don't let me collaborate with evil people. Do not let me eat of their delicacies, David says in verse 4. Evil people always tempt the flesh. Ooh, come eat this nice food. I got this luscious babe for you, and this snort of cocaine, it'll make you feel so good. And how about all the money I'm going to give you if you will just sign up with me in my evil scheme? Well, David could be referring to evil people tempting the flesh. Adam Clark says it could be evil people who are tempting David to eat things forbidden by the law, like shrimp. Do not let me eat of their delicacies. Oh, they're serving shrimp cocktail. I'm tempted to eat that. I don't know. I don't really think Clark is right about that. Or it could be the pagans are having a pagan idol feast, which is very common, and David says, I don't want to go to one of these feasts and eat idol meat. Well, I think it's just as easy to say simply that David is saying, I don't want to participate in anything evil that evil people might give me to tempt me to practice evil with them. We go now to verses 5 and 6 of Psalms 141. David continues, let the righteous one strike me. It is an act of faithful love. Let him rebuke me. It is oil for my head. Let me not refuse it. Even now my prayer is against the evil acts of the wicked. When their rulers will be thrown off the sides of a cliff, the people will listen to my words, for they are pleasing. Now in verse 5, David is so determined not to do, think, and speak evil, as he said in verses 3 and 4. Now in verse 5, he's willing for righteous people to hit him upside the head to keep him from doing that. Let the righteous one strike me. Now why would David want a righteous one to strike him? Well, of course, to keep David from participating in the evil of evil people. Let the righteous one strike me. It is an act of faithful love. Here's some other scriptures that have the same idea. Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. That reminds me, about a year and a half ago, I was with a good friend of mine. He said, Dan, I'm going to tell you something that's going to hurt you. I said, oh boy, I don't want to hear this. And he told me that my gut was too big, which it was, 23 pounds overweight. And in the next year and a half, I lost 23 pounds. Now, I might have done that anyway if he hadn't hit me with that. But he was looking out for me. He wasn't trying to be nasty, and I understood that. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, and I am one who hates confrontation. I don't think I have ever told anybody anything about what they needed to do to reform themselves. I've seen plenty of examples where I needed to say something, but I just don't like saying it. I'm from the South, and we're very polite down here, and it's hard to say something that's awkward. Proverbs 9:8, do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. And assuming you have a friend, a brother, he's wise, he's a Christian, he needs to hear the truth, he's not going to turn on you if you reprove him. Now, David engages in a little bit of imprecation here. He says, my prayer is against the evil acts of the wicked at the end of verse 5. And then he says in verse 6, when their rulers will be thrown off the sides of a cliff. Whoa, that's pretty severe. The people will listen to my words. The people will listen to David's words, for David's words are pleasing. Of course it's pleasing, because the enemies of Israel would be destroyed. And I've talked about imprecation so much. David is a ruler. He needs to deal with evil, which means he's got to be rough with them. He's got to kill them. He's got to destroy them and so forth. And I'm not worried about that. Now, as far as David's enemies, the nations who are his enemies, they have rulers who will be, thrown off the sides of a cliff. Other translations have, they will be thrown from the cliffs. They will be thrown from the sides of the rock. From the cliffs is the NIV, the NASB is they will be thrown from the sides of the rock. I like the Holman Christian Study Bible. They will be thrown off the sides of a cliff. Now, later on, that actually happened to the Edomites, who are, of course, the inveterate enemies of Israel. 2 Chronicles 25:12. The occasion of this verse is when Amaziah, the southern king of Judah, who ruled between 796 and 767, Amaziah defeated the Edomites. We read in 2 Chronicles 25:12, the sons of Judah also captured 10,000 alive, that's 10,000 Edomites alive, and brought them to the top of the cliff and threw them down from the top of the cliff, so that they were all dashed to pieces. Well, that little episode under Amaziah cannot be what David was referring to, because Amaziah reigned from 796 to 767, and David reigned from 1010 to 970, about 200 years before that. So this incident cannot refer to what happened under Amaziah. It is kind of interesting, though, that this is exactly what happened to David's enemies, or to Israel's enemies, long after David was dead. We don't know exactly what David was referring to. Adam Clark says, if we knew the occasion on which this psalm was made, we might be the better able to understand the allusions in the text. Well, of course, that's the common problem. We never know when these psalms are written, so we have to speculate. Moving now to Psalms 141, verses 7 through 10, David continues, as when one plows and breaks open the earth, our bones have been scattered at the mouth of Sheol. For my eyes are toward you, O God, the Lord. In you I take refuge. Do not leave me defenseless. Keep me from the jaws of the trap which they have set for me, and from the snares of those who do iniquity. Let the wicked fall into their own nets while I pass by safely. Now in verse 7, David says, as when one plows and breaks open the earth, our bones have been scattered. Well, when a plow breaks up the earth, when the disc hits the ground, and the ground curls up around that disc and is thrown outside the furrow, the land is broken into bits, if you will picture a farmer farming a field. So the plow breaks open the earth, as David says in verse 7. Well, that's exactly what happens to the bones that David is referring to in verse 7. Our bones have been scattered. This is a metaphor, of course. He's saying just like that earth is broken up, Israel's bones have been broken up. And they've been scattered at the mouth of Sheol. David could have been referring to an historical occasion, or it could just be a proverbial phrase referring to danger. We're in trouble. Our bones are being scattered at the mouth of Sheol, at the mouth of death. Hard to say. Sheol, of course, is the Hebrew for grave, transliteration of the Hebrew for grave or death, or the shadowy place of the underworld for departed spirits. Here, I'll just take it as our bones have been scattered at the mouth of death or at the mouth of the grave. To carry forth with the metaphor, the bones lay unburied. They're scattered at the mouth of the grave, but they're not put in the grave. Or it could be the bones have been previously buried, and then enemies have dug up the bones and scattered the bones at the mouth of the grave in an act of desecration and disrespect. But at any rate, Israel's in a mess in verse 7. And then David says in verse 8, for my eyes are toward you, O God, the Lord, in you I take refuge. Do not leave me defenseless. So now he stated the problem. The enemies are after me. Now he's in his typical pattern, how he's turning to God for help. And he calls God, O God, the Lord. Now the NASB capitalizes God. Usually it's Lord that's capitalized. When you see Lord, that's capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, that's referring to Yahweh, YHWH. The name for God, the particular name for God. But when you see capital G, capital O, capital D, that is Yahweh also, YHWH. And the Lord here is Adonai. So it's O Yahweh, Adonai, O God the Lord. The translations, such as the NASB and the Holman Christian Study Bible, they're not going to say O Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, O Lord, the Lord, because that sounds dumb and awkward. So it's, O Yahweh, Adonai, O God, the Lord, in you I take refuge, David says. Do not leave me defenseless. Keep me from the jaws of the trap which they have set for me. Common metaphor, the enemies are hunters. David is the hunted, and from the snares of those who do iniquity. Again, a snare is a hunting device. Verse 10, let the wicked fall into their own nets. Again, a hunting metaphor, while I pass by safely. What David is asking for is that his enemies be hoisted on their own petard, like Haman. A petard is a gallows. Haman, the evil counselor of Xerxes, Ahasuerus, has decided that he wants to kill a lot of Jews. He wants to kill Mordecai, but you know the story in Esther. Esther outfoxes Haman, and Xerxes says, Mordecai, why don't you use Haman's petard and hoist him on his own petard? And that phrase has come down in English. I guess it's probably old-fashioned by now. But the idea is the same. David is saying, all the evil that my adversaries are devising and planning, let that evil fall on their own heads. Let them fall into their own nets. And with that happy, triumphant note, we are now finished with Psalms 141. We are now prepared to go to Psalm 142. In our next audio, I will call that psalm, You Are My Refuge. I hope you stay tuned for that psalm, and I hope you enjoyed this one.